The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Well, hello there. This is Fred Brack reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And on behalf of the North Carolina Reading Service and myself, your reader, Fred Brack, and Carter and Karen Glass, who are sponsoring our podcast for so many years, very happy New Year to you. And we wish you all the very best of health and happiness in the coming year. And 12 months of Our State magazine. Thank you very much, Our State, for sending us a complimentary copy to read to our listeners. And the cover says it's a special anniversary edition, 90 years at Our State. They've been doing this since 1933. I can't tell you how many years I've been reading it. I would guess it's about 20 years right now. Pretty picture of a snowy scene in North Carolina. On the cover, I'm going to be describing some more, so I don't need to describe that particular one to you. But we are going to start with the From Elizabeth column, as we always do, by Elizabeth Hudson, editor-in-chief. And she's entitled today's column, Life's Rich Tapestry. My grandmother lived right behind the Randolph County Courthouse in a 1930 white bungalow that's long since been torn down, with a deep backyard and a beautiful flower garden that's long since been paved over to make way for a municipal parking lot. In the 70s, she worked at the courthouse in the Register of Deeds office, and she took her lunch hour from exactly 12:30 to 1:30 p.m., during which time she walked from the courthouse's back steps down the hill, through her backyard, past her beautiful flower beds, and into the back door of her house. She would make a sandwich, tomato in the summer, grilled pimento cheese in the winter, percolate a fresh pot of coffee, and spend the remainder of her lunch break doing two things, watching all my children on television and working on a large needlepoint sampler that she draped across her knees while she stitched. My grandmother had always been comfortable with a needle and thread in her hand. For years, she'd sewn her own clothes, and in the 50s, she worked as a sales clerk at Buddy's Dress Shop in Asheboro, helping with alterations as needed. When my mother opened her craft store in 1972, my grandmother picked up embroidery, drawn to the large patterns of Americana samplers, homespun works of needlecraft that featured letters of the alphabet, decorative borders, birds, flowering trees, celestial bodies, the sun, the moon, and the stars. For all the ways I remember my grandmother, how she fastened a single strand of beads around her slender neck and dabbed her lipstick with a tissue, how she flipped open the top of her silver-plated Zippo to light a cigarette, how she folded her hands over her Bible in her lap at church, how she knelt by a plastic bucket in her garden, filling it with wild onion and tufts of clover dug up by the roots. My clearest memory of her is lacing that thick, warm wool around her fingers, of the long, slow pulls of the needle through the canvas, of how she settled into a rhythm of work that fit her quiet demeanor. After my grandfather died, she always kept the needlework project going, beautiful tapestries emerging beneath her fingertips, a tactile comfort for the heartache she most surely felt. When her eyesight began to dim from cataracts, the muscle memory in her hands helped guide the stitches, and although she worked more slowly, she maintained a steady, even tension on the yarn. Her work is elegant on the underside, where no one would ever see it, as it was on top. If you met my grandmother, you might have thought she lived a plain life. She didn't travel far from home and mostly walked where she needed to go. Junk clothes on a line and canned her food. Beets and beans, corn and tomatoes. She reused bread bags, rinsed out jelly jars for drinking glasses, refolded wrapping paper. But she could also whistle to mimic the warble of a robin, recite fairy tales from memory, and spot Orion rising in the clear winter sky. She traced the constellations with her fingertips until I could see them too, a tapestry of celestial bodies imprinted in the sky, a motif of stars adding their shining light to the heavens. And now, without our usual musical accompaniment, I'm going to interpret the pictorial in the center of Our State magazine, as I do every month. This month it is called A Chance of Flurries. Dancing, floating, falling from the sky. When snowflakes grace us with their presence, they inspire creativity, showing us familiar landscapes in a whole new light. Written by Katie St. Singh. I will read the caption first and then describe the picture. The Piedmont and coastal plain tend to get less snow than high elevation areas, like the Roan Highlands, pictured here. But we North Carolinians are resourceful. If we don't see enough snowflakes in our neck of the woods, we make our own. So here we have a lone hiker going down a narrow path on a little, I don't know whether they call this a bald or not. There's no trees growing immediately where this person is. The path is narrow and looks like it's a little, possibly some little rocks. There's a small boulder to the left and some other ones further down delineating the pathway just a little bit. And some distance away are completely snow-covered evergreen trees, looking absolutely gorgeous. And there's a big one on the far right of the picture also. And then everything drops off, and the view is that of the gorgeous foothills of western North Carolina. And what we see there is mainly a brown tinged with white as the fallen snow has gone between the trees there, and the trees have lost any leaves that they had. It looks like there's less pine trees over in that area, perhaps. So we see a mix of brown and white, and maybe a little green over there. Over leaf, it says, hit the slopes in high country. Winter adventurers have find their thrills in the highest part of our state, where the temperatures plunge and the white stuff sticks around. In 1961, North Carolina's first commercial ski operation opened to unexpected acclaim. The State magazine reported, most observers were surprised to behold a season total of 3,000 adventurous skiers who appeared from somewhere to enjoy the Cataloochee slopes. A series of ski facilities followed in quick succession, and today skiers flock to resorts like Sugar Mountain, peak elevation 5,300 feet, and Beach Mountain, peak elevation 5,506 feet, as well as the Roan Highlands, 6,286 feet at its highest point, for more rugged pursuits. Now, on this page is another small caption. It says, winter brings out familiar faces. Snowmen on Jane Bald in the Roan Highlands, Sugar Bear, the polar bear mascot of Sugar Mountain, and skiers on Beach Mountain. So our human Sugar Bear there is waving at us in the all-white outfit, except for a red vest and a little red on his or her cap, as he goes down the hill in a large inner tube, not the kind from an automobile, but the kind that is shaped like that, but is purple and has handles on it that you can hold on to. And it's not too much of a slope anyway. And then down below that, there is a bare boulder with a small snowman that somebody's left there, has two little sticks, and I do mean little sticks for arms and not much else of interest. And on the right-hand side, although it's a beginner slope based on the slope of it and the fact that there's no moguls there, we have two young ladies skiing down, kicking up a little spray to the side as they are banking left and right in the photo. They have on heavy winter parkas and helmets, congratulations, ladies, and gray great big goggles with a reflective front on them. The sun in the bright blue sky is just a blast of light coming out at us. Overleaf Frosted Flakes, Clemens and Winston-Salem. Customers are delighted to peek inside the display case at Avis Cupcakes and find snowflakes, a wintry version of the bakery's seasonal sugar cookies. After opening Avis in her native New Jersey and winning Food Network's Cupcake Wars in 2012, Michelle Spell and her family moved south to open a shop in Florida. Missing the cold and snow, they'd escape the heat at home, closing the blinds, cranking up the AC, and baking snowflake cookies to whip up a season. And at two Avis locations in Forsyth County, her husband and children continue to help her creativity shine. They're on River Ridge Drive in Clemens and Haines Mall Boulevard in Winston-Salem, avascupcakes.com. The caption says, Michelle Spell named her bakery after her daughter Ava, then two, who would hear the kitchen timer go off and exclaim, "My cupcakes are ready!" Now 13, Ava helps out in the bakery every day, and both of them are in the picture. The cookies are in the shape of snowflakes, well, as much as you can do with snowflakes, since everyone is unique, supposedly. These have 6 points on them, and then the entire top is covered with a white icing, but the white icing had a stamp applied to it, which further refines the snowflake and gives it a little bit of the stems that come out almost like a branch going out to the end of each one of the points of the cookies. And there are probably about 7 or 8 of them on the page here. The Sound of Silence. Our mountains invite quiet contemplation in every season, but winter brings a particular kind of meditative beauty away from the excitement and activity of ski slopes and beach mountain. Far from the busy streets of downtown Highlands, these western North Carolina communities are hushed, pastoral, peaceful. Here and everywhere else across the state, snow gives us an opportunity to appreciate our favorite places anew, all dressed in white. And we have 2 pictures here, very different actually. Scenes of life in western North Carolina, like a barn on Buck Creek Road in Highlands, and swings dangling from trees in Beach Mountain, slow down in the snow. So the swings are on the left-hand side. It's interesting that, I don't know whether there was a wind blowing or what, but there are 3 different types of swings, and they're all kind of at an angle, is almost as if somebody's sitting them, but we're not seeing them. The trees, by the way, which fill the picture, are completely snow-covered. So we've got that wonderful effect of a white tree with no leaves on it. Just a little iciness near the top, which is wonderful. On the left, we have a tire swing, and it is swinging a little to the left. I can't help. Well, I would wonder if somebody gave it a push, but there are no footprints in this picture, but it is swinging to the left. And in the center is a swing that is swinging to the right, and it's the classic type. Well, this isn't a board. It's like a leather strap that you sit on between the two parts that go up to the branch up above. And on the right is a very different kind. It's a handle. It's you jump up and you swing yourself, if you will. You don't sit on anything. And that one's tilting to the left. So we've got them tilting in different directions here. And you have to kind of wonder how they did all of that. And on the right is one of those classic red barns. It's like 3 stories high in the center with a door at the first, double door at the first level, and a double door that's smaller just above it on the second level. And both of those are trimmed in white and have big X's on the door. That's an extra board to make it extra sturdy and keep it from sagging. Those are painted also. And then the third level doesn't have anything but goes up to a peak, and there's a little cupola up at the top. And then on the side, at pretty much about the level and 1.5 levels, a roof starts down and comes to the side. And then you've got some stable doors that open on the right-hand side into an area enclosed completely by fencing of four boards across each, and that leads to two different pastures. And the roof is completely covered with snow, and all of the trees behind are pretty much covered with snow, and the sky is kind of a whiteout behind that. Overleaf Snowman's Land in Newton. When Frozen Jr. opened at the Green Room Theater in early 2022, the audience marveled over lighting effects that made it look like ice was cracking all over the proscenium and the floor. Life-size moving puppets of Olaf the Snowman and Sven the Reindeer, made, like most of the Green Room's costumes, in-house, and the talented young cast members who sang and danced their way through the beloved Disney musical Frozen Jr. have been selected as the Green Room's annual youth production in 2020. But that cast was only able to perform once before the pandemic hit. So for everyone involved with the production, including eight of the original actors, it was extra special to see the show finally come to life. We have a double-page spread here of a close-up of two of the actors. It says, to prepare for her role as Olaf, the first time on the Green Room stage, 10-year-old Emma Spencer learned to move the snowman puppet's mouth with each line of her dialogue. So I said, there's two actors, there's one actor, and the other actor is, well, you know, it's a gigantic puppet. It's almost as big as the 10-year-old girl. And it's a snowman with a very large carrot for a nose. Sparkle and Shine. The Green Room was established in 1987 and moved to its current home, a former post office renovated into a playhouse, in 2010. It prides itself on being a true community theater, bringing together neighbors not only in Newton, where local volunteers sew costumes, build and paint sets, work in the box office and usher performances, but also across central North Carolina in the 8 weeks of rehearsal for each youth musical production. The performers and their parents, some of whom live as far away as Charlotte, Boone, and Greensboro, forge lasting friendships. There at 10 South Main Avenue in Newton, thegreenroomtheater.org. And remember that theater, when you're doing plays, is R-E at the end, not E-R. And on the left it says, Frozen Jr.'s cast of 31 included Katie Grace DeHart as Elsa, Grant Sizemore as Oaken, and Lucy Roseman as a member of the Snow Chorus. There's a picture here of Elsa. It's focused on a snowflake ornament that's kind of hung on a ponytail that's swung around on the side of the camera, and her face, while in the background and very pretty, is out of focus. And then we have her to the right with her hands over her head performing, and then we have all of the younger members in a row all taking a pose as they sing. Or maybe they're just taking a pose for the photograph. I don't really know. And then we have one of the members of the cast doing a walkover. It's like we go up in a handstand, but you keep on going. Wow, that is as talent. One leg is straight up in the air, and the other leg is almost touching the ground on the backside as she gets ready to go all the way over. Camping in the Clouds at Roanne Mountain. At an elevation of more than 6,000 feet, Roan Mountain rises up into a realm of its own, averaging more than 100 inches of snow each year. A plan to turn the venerable mountain into a downhill skiing destination gained momentum in the 50s, and although it never panned out, snowshoers, cross-country skiers, and mountaineers relish the area's backcountry beauty. Photographer Steve Yoakum and his Belgian Malinois Kane love that in winter, busy stretches of the Appalachian Trail, quiet under a blanket of snow. And here we have a close-up of frozen bushes on the ground. It looks like coral. They're completely covered with ice or snow, and the nature of them is it looks like those coral leaves that you sometimes see on a coral reef. Just beyond that is a yellowish tent, and then that very large Belgian Malinois dog, Kane, looking at the cameraman, who's probably the person that they're talking about, Steve, in there. He says, "Hey, look at me for this picture." The background is really washed out because the scene just kind of drops off at this point, and we're actually looking at clouds that have gone into the valleys. The very tops of them are white, but as it gets down lower, it just all turns into like a yellowish mist. And now let's talk about winter's charms in Kingston. In Lenoir County, the Morgan family crafts silvery pewter snowflakes that dance elegantly, far too pretty to put away when the holidays are over. Pewter, a metal alloy of tin, copper, and antimony, has been prized for its durability since at least the Middle Ages. Kent and Martha Morgan found their way to the craft in 1980 after watching a pewter-making demonstration at Colonial Williamsburg. Over the next 40 years, they built a thriving business and eventually passed House of Morgan Pewter down to their nephew Matt, his wife Amanda, and their three children. With every ornament, keychain, and piece of jewelry that the Morgans cast, they continue both a family tradition and an art form that goes back centuries. HouseOfMorganPewter.net. Picture here, Amanda and Matt Morgan are the stewards of their family's pewter-making business, offering more than 800 handcrafted designs, including a wide selection of North Carolina-themed pieces. This picture that they have focused in on here is a pewter snowflake. It's just beautiful. That would be very unusual to have on your tree, and it's held by a red ribbon. And then we see pictures of them working here, and the machine looks like it's a very small version of a bandsaw so they can cut pieces of pewter, but I'm not sure what it is. And a couple of those snowflakes lying on the table with labels attached. It says the House of Morgan Pewter, and I can't read what it says underneath because it's a little out of focus, but they're very pretty. Overleaf, weaving warmth. The snowflakes were a happy accident. In 1983, New Bern resident Billy Ruth Sudduth enrolled in a basket-making class to unwind from her demanding job as a school psychologist, and knew almost instantly that she'd found her passion. The following year, while demonstrating the craft at Tryon Palace, she rescued a failed four-leaf clover by connecting two of them, and her signature design was born. Her Carolina snowflakes eventually hung in the White House, as well as homes around the world. Sudduth died in 2021, but her baskets live on in private and public collections, and weavers still turn to her pattern booklet to learn how to make intricate snowflakes that never melt away. There's one of them here. You can tell these are reeds. Some of them are brownish reed color, and the rest of them are purple, and they are beautifully fashioned into the shape of a snowflake. This particular one has 8 petals, if you will, on it, and everything is just perfectly cut and matched, and you know, you can't really tell how they're attached, but it's just beautifully done. And how about sweet spoonfuls? You know the recipe. If such a simple concoction can be called a recipe. Gather milk and sugar and vanilla and snow. Freshly fallen. Stir well, and away from the dogs. Stir well and enjoy. In part of the state where snow is not a guarantee, generations of North Carolinians have learned to celebrate the white stuff as much as possible. We might prepare by placing a bowl or a dishpan in a prime location outside to catch the cleanest, fluffiest flakes, of course. And we watch the winter sky with anticipation, waiting for those 3 magic words, chance of flurries. Sorry they don't give you the recipe. You have to know the proportions yourself. This is a picture I think I've seen before, maybe not necessarily exactly like this one, but it is a very sharp 180-degree turn in a road taken in winter. And I'll come back to that in a moment. It says the scenic route in Jackson County. This season has a way of slowing things down, of asking us to consider the bright, crystalline brilliance of a world frosted over. Wherever we're traveling along winding mountain roads like this one near Glenville, over rolling hills in the Piedmont, through acres of farmland in the coastal plain, whether we get a heavy snow or a gentle dusting or a thin layer of rime, we'll pause to admire the wonder of winter in North Carolina. We'll take it slow to take in the show. Now, this must be taken by a drone. What we have here is a two-lane roadway with a yellow, double yellow line down the center. It comes in from the center on the right-hand side, and it goes out directly in the bottom, or practically on the crease of the page in this two-page picture. And it comes in, and it sweeps a little bit toward us, and then it sweeps up into the upper left-hand corner and makes a very, very sharp turn, 180 degrees. And we see one vehicle, a red truck, on the road, and it's headed down the right-hand side, and it's about to go off the bottom of the page. But the two things that make this picture so interesting is there's no snow on the road, or basically none, just maybe a tiny little dusting in places. So you've got this dark gray surface of the blacktop road, and everything else is pure white. There is snow beside the road. There are snow-covered trees. I mean, you can hardly see the branches, just enough to make the picture interesting. And it's taken straight down from a drone or something like that. So it really is a fascinating picture, the way it's taken. The dark gray of the road and a little bit of red from that truck and just shooting straight down. Just beautiful. I'm just about out of time here, so I'm going to look for this one picture that's here at the front of the magazine, and I'm trying to find out where it is. It's on page 30, so quickly we turn to page 30. We'll just have enough time to talk about it. Usually they have three pictures up here, but there's only one this time. It says, January, starting a new year, feels like watching snowfall. The slate is wiped clean, and we're filled with anticipation for what's to come. Fading sunlight peeks through clouds over Boone, revealing one last glimpse of a snowy scene off of North Carolina Highway 105 before nightfall. It's a beautiful snowy picture. Trees in the foreground, covered as usual as the photographers like them, with snow and ice. Just the roof of a little building over there, and then everything kind of fades out in the distance. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Questions, comments, call the studios 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.